You're going to meet with us. You're going to draw us to you in all these ways, Lord, that you're going to guard us. You're going to guard our minds, guard our emotions, guard our spirits. Whatever we have need of, Lord, you're going to become that protector. And so just allow us to receive from you this evening. Give us ears to hear what your spirit would speak to us, your church. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, saints, if you would, please open your Bibles to the book of Psalms. As we find ourselves here tonight, we begin in Psalm 139. We're going to cruise all the way down to Psalm 143. Within this, keep in mind that this is the theology of man's spiritual journey. That's what we're looking at here today, the theology of a man's spiritual journey. But keep in mind that this spiritual journey is one that really is a journey in weakness. And I think something to be making a note of, just so you can understand these psalms that we are about to look at. If you want to make a note somewhere in your own notes, just recognize this. These here are the personal prayers of King David. And so as we go through these psalms, just recognize this is David just pouring out his heart to the Lord as the sweet psalmist. What we're going to do is this. As we look at Psalm 139, we're going to be seeing that God searches me. That's the first thing. God searches me. And where it says in verse 1, you know, Lord, you have searched me and you've known me. So keep in mind that as we see this God searches me, I want you to understand that God knows what to guard me from. He searches me. He knows everything. There's nothing about God that is like he looks at your situation and scratches his, you know, head and said, I didn't realize that was going to happen. So just understand that he searches me. He knows us. He knows our weaknesses. Psalm 140, after we see that he searches me in Psalm 140, we're going to see that he safeguards me. God safeguards me, where it says in verse 1, deliver me, O Lord, from the evil men. So first he searches him, then he safeguards him as he watches over David. Basically, that psalm is a psalm of God. I want you to guard me physically. That's what we're looking at in Psalm 140. In Psalm 141, we're going to see that here it is God sanctifies me. That's what we're going to be looking at there. In other words, this area of internal weaknesses. And so I just think it's important to recognize that this is where God guards me spiritually. And so that's what we're looking at. When we get to Psalm 142, we move into God shelters me. That's what we're going to be seeing. So basically, we're going to see that he's going to guard me emotionally. And that's sometimes what we really need, because David, he cries out to the Lord, and where he says in verse 2, I pour out my complaint before him and I declare before him my trouble. So he just pours out just all these emotions to the Lord. And then lastly in Psalm 143, that God leads me into a place of submission. And so this is where God guards me completely. In other words, that he becomes that strength in my weakness. He brings me to a place of where I have security, I have power, I have all those things that I need, all those things that I'm seeking. So that's where we're going to be at here this evening. So as we start by launching off in Psalm 139, where God searches me, basically what we're going to see is this. The God, he's going to know what to guard me from. What we're going to realize is this. Within this Psalm of 139, we're going to see that we're going to recognize that God in his attributes understands everything. We're going to see that in the first six verses that God is omniscient. When we get to verses 7 through 12, God is going to be omnipresent. When we get into verses 14 through 16, we're going to see that God is omnipotent. And then in verses 17 through 24, we're going to recognize that God is sovereign and that God is holy. So that's what we're going to be looking at as far as those attributes of God. And I think what happens is this. Where God knows me and he knows my weaknesses. And I think what's important is as I get to know God, and I get to know God in his strengths, I get to know God with what he's able to do, what happens is this. I realize that what? I can't. I don't compare with God. I recognize that he has the omniscience. I have no clue what he's talking about. I don't really fully understand. Where we recognize, he says in verse 1, you've searched me and known me. Verse 6 says this, such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It's high. I cannot attain it. Do you understand? God is able to. I recognize I'm not. I don't know these things. I can't understand all the things that God can knows. I can't be like God is, where God can be everywhere present. I can't be. God can do all things. I can do nothing without him. So you understand, by knowing God in his strengths, it helps me understand what? My weaknesses. But do you understand that God doesn't worry about us coming thinking that we have to be strong? He says, just come in your weaknesses. Because what? In our weakness, his strength is made perfect. See, I want your strength through me. I want your spirit through me. So that's what we begin to look at. And so when we see that I'm fragile in my mind, I'm fragile in my emotions, I'm fragile in my body, all these things, you are so far beyond me, and I recognize that I can't do what it is that you do. But keep in mind that in God's greatness and in his splendor and his majesty, I want you to just take a look at verse 16. Because what it declares is this. In Psalm 139, verse 16, it says, your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed, and in your book they were all written, the days fashioned for me, when as yet there was none of them. I want you to understand that everything about God and his greatness is not just to be generic by saying God says, oh, look at me. Everything in his greatness is to do this, is to show that his care for us is intimate. And that we have a God who is able to do all things, who knows all things, who can do all things, and he's very, very connected to us. And so I just think it's so important to recognize that it teaches us that everything that he does for us is intimate and personal. And this is a beautiful thing when we recognize, God, you can do all things. I can't do anything. And he says, don't worry, because what? I love you. And so I think it's just important. So let's just take a look here and just jump into it, the first six verses, where you see that God is omniscient. I want you to understand that what David does in the recognition of that God knows David's whole life. There's nothing about David's life that is going to be a surprise. There's not going to be one day where God says, I didn't know this was going to happen. But I do want you to see here that David makes a statement. He says, Lord, you have searched me and known me. You have known my sitting down and my rising up. You understand my thoughts afar off. You comprehend my path and my lying down. You are acquainted with all my ways, for there is not a word on my tongue, but behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. You have hedged me behind and before, and you laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. I love the fact that David makes a statement. He says, you have searched me and have known me. There's a lot of Christians today that would say kind of something different. They say, listen, I've examined my own life and I'm fine. I've examined my life and I haven't found anything. Well, keep in mind that when I examine my life and I find nothing, it's because I've only done a cursory examination. When God does what? I do a deep dive into everything. And so I love the fact that what we see is this. We note that David recognizes his weaknesses. Of course, verse 6 is very much so. I can't even understand the things that you understand. I cannot attain to this kind of knowledge. But what we recognize is this. As David goes through this, he makes a statement, you've searched me, you've known me. You know when I sit up, you know when I rise up, you know when I sit down, you know when I rise up. You understand my thoughts afar off. Even though I haven't even thought them yet, guess what? You already know them. You understand how incredible God's omniscience is? He understands not just the words that you say. He not only knows the actions that you do, but he also does what? I know the thoughts that you think, and I can even tell you the thoughts you haven't thought yet. Now, what does that tell me? Well, God's already said, I love you, and I've made a plan for you, and my son has died for you. Nothing that we think, nothing that we say, nothing that we do, and God can say, oh, if I would have known that, man, you would have been in this whole other category. That's not God. I love the fact that in his omniscience that David is recognizing one thing. Verse 5, you've hedged me behind and before, and you laid your hand upon me. I know that you have my past, my present, my future all locked in, and you've secured it. And what a beautiful thing that is when we recognize that we are just totally connected to God in that way. Now, after he talks about this area of just his omniscience, now he moves from that place of God and the power of God knowing all things and how David is weak concerning that kind of knowledge. He moves to that God is omnipresent, that God's knowledge of David's geographical life, if you will, that you cannot hide from God. And so just keep in mind that we're going to recognize as we go through verses 7 through 12 is you can never be in a place where God isn't watching over you. This is great, no matter where you are. Because sometimes we think, what, God, you're watching me here, but where'd you go now? No, he's always there. So keep in mind, he says this, verse 7, as he speaks about God's omnipresence, where can I go from your spirit, or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and I dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, so if I go out in the furthest parts of the sky, the deepest parts of the sea, verse 10 is this, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall fall on me, even the night shall be light about me. Indeed, the darkness shall not hide from you. But the night shines as the day, and the darkness and light are both alike to you. You understand that you can never be in a place where God can't see you. Like, it's dark here. God says, it doesn't make a difference. Night is just like light to me. There is never a place that you can go that God doesn't see you. And understand that, as we noted, what? There's never a thought that you can think or a word that you can say or something that you can do that God doesn't already know that you're going to do. So if that goes into your mind, and then take a look at this next section where not only is God omniscient and God is omnipresent, but we also see that God is omnipotent. Take a look at verses 13 through 16. He says this, for you formed my inward parts. You covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows very well. I love the fact that as God begins to create us, that he ultimately does this work where what? He forms the baby, and now we have ultrasounds today, but keep in mind, for the most part, the baby is formed what? In secret. It's formed out of the sight of men. The only thing that we're aware of is what? The belly's expanding, kicks here and there. But for the most part, the babies are formed in secret. And I love the fact that he says this, you formed my inward parts, the very core of who I am, and you covered me in my mother's womb. That what you do and your majesty and how you create is what? It's not known by us. See, there's things that we can try to determine, but do you understand that when the baby is born, that you have the egg and you have the seed and they join together and they become one, and then it splits into two cells, and then that splits into four cells, and that splits into eight cells. Do you understand? That's the multiplication process. Well, one cell determines I'm going to become a blood vessel. One says I'm going to become a nerve ending. One says I'm going to become skin. One says I'm going to become a hair. One says I'm going to become a stomach. How does a cell know when it divides from this cell to that cell that I'm going to become something completely different now? I'm going to grow. Do you understand that when the cells is there, that all of a sudden the cell says I'm going to become a heart. I'm going to become a mind. I'm going to become an eye. I'm going to become an ear. All these things that God does, he makes it so what? He forms you. Now, it's funny, science are trying to figure out, oh yeah, this is why it happens, this is what it does. Now, keep in mind that if you cut yourself, there are some cells that'll do what? Well, they'll come and they'll become muscle. Others will become blood vessels. Others will become skin. How does the cell know that? Fearfully and wonderfully made. And so as we look to this, I just think it's interesting. We're in verse 14. He says, I praise you. I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows very well. I don't know how you do it, but I know that it's you who does it. And that's why I praise you. I may not understand all the things and how you do it, but I do know that you do it, and that because you do it, you're worthy of praise. My frame, verse 15, was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Now, keep in mind, this is a little bit that it's interesting in the version of the New King James. It says that we're wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Keep in mind, that's poetic. It means that I'm wrought in a place that what? People can't see. It doesn't mean like, you know, Santa Claus makes toys at the North Pole. God makes little babies inside some little cave in the earth. That's not what he does. He talks about this where he says, I was skillfully wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. In other words, in the place of secrecy, the mother's womb. So it's just a poetic way of saying in a place that nobody can see, nobody knows. Where he's already said what? Verse 13, you covered me in my mother's womb. So that's all he's talking about poetically. Now, verse 16, he says this, although man can't see this, and we don't see this on this day-to-day basis, in verse 16 says, it says, your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed. Do you understand? I wasn't even fully created. I wasn't born yet, and yet you already knew me. You already chose me. You already called me. So all this stuff is just so powerful where makes a statement being yet unformed, and in your book they were all written the days fashioned for me. So not only was my being determined by God, knowing it, then we see this. Every day of my life was already determined by God. That's incredible to me to recognize that kind of care he puts into my life. So as we look at his, you know, omnipotence, is like, boy, God, you can do everything. And because you could do everything, I can trust you with whatever situation I'm in because I know what? Well, every day of my life. In your book, they were all written, the days fashioned for me, when as yet there was none of them. Before I was even born, you already had my whole life worked out. And that is such a comforting thing. Now, verse 17, he moves from the omniscient to the omnipresence to the omnipotence to now he talks about God being sovereign and holy. Take a look at here within this sovereignty and within his holiness. David initially talks about him and his weaknesses and what he, you know, what he can, what he can't do. But then he says this in verse 17, speaking of God's sovereignty and his holiness, he says this, how precious are your thoughts to me, O God? How great is the sum of them? If I should count them, they would be more than the number in the sand. When I awake, I am still with you. I love the fact that he recognizes this God who knows everything, can do everything, and is everywhere present, has thoughts for us. And then he says this, those thoughts are precious. Precious. There's a term in that precious that has this loving intimacy. And so I love the heart. He says, the thoughts that you have to me are so intimate and so loving. That's what kind of thoughts. He says, and how great is the sum of them? They can't be counted. And so he says, even if I could count them, they'd be more than the number of the sand. And now in verse 19, we continue to see that he's sovereign, he's holy, because in this area he says this, oh, that you would slay the wicked, O God. In other words, I know how you are to me, and I know the thoughts that you have to me, but here's the issue. That in this world, because you can see all things, because you're everywhere present, because you can do all things, there's wicked. There's a wicked here, and why is it that you, with such power and such intimacy and such love for me, why is this wicked coming? And so he says in verse 19, oh, that you would slay the wicked, O God. Depart from me, therefore, you bloodthirsty men. For they speak against you, that is God, wickedly. Your enemies take your name in vain. Do I not hate them, O Lord, who hate you? And do I not loathe those who rise up against you? I hate them with a perfect hatred. I count them as my enemies. So what David says is this, is that those people that hate you, that don't want anything to do with you, I don't want anything to do with them. And I love the heart that he's saying, what? If they're not for you, they're against you. And I only want those that are for you. And then he says this in verse 23. He says, search me, O God, and know my heart. See, it's easy to always point out they're bad, they're bad, they're bad. But what happens is this, God, take a look at my own heart. And so he makes a statement, search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my anxieties and see if there's any wicked way in me and lead me in the way everlasting. So as he begins to say, I know I want you to deal with the wickedness as far as the others, now he says this, I need you to deal with the wickedness in me. Search it and see if there be any wicked way in me. And so I love the heart of it as he begins to go through. So he begins to say, listen, if there's anything hurtful, if there's anything offenses, if there's anything morally in error in my life, deal with me with that. And so I just love the fact that he says, because of who you are, you know exactly what to guard me from. Now, as we're moving from, you know what to guard me from, now in Psalm 140, he begins to shift and he says, I want you to watch over and guard me physically. God safeguards. Take a look here. In the first five verses, we begin to see there's a problem. And here's the problem. Deliver me, O Lord, from evil men. Preserve me from violent men who plan evil things in their hearts. They continually gather together for war. They sharpen their tongues like a serpent. The poison of asp is under their lips, Selah. Keep me, O Lord, from the hands of the wicked. Preserve me from violent men who have purposed to make my steps stumble. The proud have hidden a snare for me and cords. They have spread a net by the wayside. They have set traps for me, Selah. I want you to see that David talks about, I'm being attacked. Now, what's interesting is this. In the writing that David does, he points out what? Two kinds of attacks. One is a physical attack. The other is an emotional attack. Both are devastating. And there are enemies that they do that. I want you to see here. He says, deliver me, O Lord, from evil men. Preserve me from the violent men. The physical attack, who plan evil things in their heart. They continually gather together for war, and then they sharpen their tongues like a serpent, and the poison of asp is under their lips. Do you understand that there is this physical attack, but there's also this emotional attack? There is this area where they want to hurt you physically. They want to make you, you know, have pain physically, but they also want you to have pain emotionally. And this is where they sharpen their tongues and they have poison. In other words, they try to deceive. They try to, you know, kill me emotionally and wound me emotionally along with the wounding physically. So this is the problem. David is facing these attacks, some emotional, some physical. And so what does he do? Well, in verses 6-8, he gives a petition. After he declares his problem, I'm being attacked, here's his petition in verses 6-8. He talks about, I need you to shelter me. I need you to protect me. Don't watch over them. Me. I need this right now. And so what happens is, don't you ever recognize that sometimes when you're being attacked, that it's always like they have this protection around them? And they just keep attacking and attacking, and nothing seems to stop them. Nothing seems to prevent them. And what David is saying is this, hedge me about, protect me. Don't do them anymore. Don't let them get away with it, but watch over me. Take a look at verse 6. And I said to the Lord, you are my God. Hear the voice of my supplications, O Lord. O God, the Lord, the strength of my salvation. You have covered my head in the day of battle. The covered my head means this. You've been a shelter. You've been a shield over me. And this is what David is crying out. He says, do not grant, O Lord, the desires of the wicked. Do not further his wicked scheme, lest they be exalted. So he's now saying initially, God, you know what they're doing. You know they're trying to hurt me physically. You know they're trying to attack me spiritually. And what I'm asking, God, is that you hear this supplication, you hear this petition, and note this. I know that you have a covering. I know that you are protecting me. Watch over me. You have covered my head in the day of battle. When it is needed, you're here. And I know that. And now, as we see here, he moves on from there to do what? To the punishment. And the punishment to the wicked is this. In verses 9 through 11, really what the punishment is this. In a nutshell, it's basically that passage to Galatians chapter 6 where you sow what you reap. He's saying this, let them reap what they have sown. I don't want you to do above and beyond, but let them experience what they are trying to dish out. So verse 9. In verses 9 through 11, he says this, in dealing with the punishment, as for the head of those who surround me, let the evil of their lips cover them. Let burning coals fall upon them. Let them be cast into the fire, into the deep pits, that they rise up not again. Let the slanderer be established. Let not the slanderer be established in the earth. Let evil hunt the violent man to overthrow him. So don't let the lies get traction, and don't let him, the evil, continue to do evil. And so as we look to that, now in verses 12 and 13, we begin to see that from this guarding me physically, you know, where I have these attacks of people coming against me, in verses 12 through 13, we see the provision. I know that the Lord will maintain the cause of the afflicted. Note that again, he says, I know. I know the Lord will maintain the cause of the afflicted, justice to the poor. Surely the righteous shall give thanks to your name, and the upright shall dwell in your presence. So basically, after he talks about don't let them get away with it, in verses 12 and 13, he simply says this, in this area of provision, I know you're going to do what's right. I love that about David. He doesn't say this is what you have to do to make it right. He just said, hey, I know that you will maintain the cause of the afflicted. You are going to do what's right. You're going to give justice to the poor. You're going to do what's right. The righteous is going to give thanks to you. Why? They're going to simply recognize you have done what's right, and the upright shall dwell in your presence. They're going to be around you because what? You do what's right. And so as we begin to see this, not only do we recognize that God initially searches, but now we see in Psalm 40 that he safeguards. But then we jump into Psalm 141. When I say in 139, he does the searching. In Psalm 140, he does the safeguards. He watches over us physically. And then in Psalm 141, we see that he sanctifies. He watches over us spiritually. And what it is this. If you want to kind of make a connection, in Psalm 140, you see the wicked doing what the wicked does. If you want to recognize what 141 does, Psalm 141, it says this, don't let what the wicked who do the things in Psalm 140, don't let me pick up any bad habits. Don't let me become what they are. And this is what's important. So often when someone does something to you, then we think that what? Now I can just move away from what God has called me to do. I don't have to let my words be seasoned with grace because theirs weren't. I don't have to let my heart be one to forgive because theirs not. Do you understand? So often we think as Christians that we can now bypass what God has called us to do because they've already bypassed us and now it's an eye for an eye. No. See, do you understand? We're not to follow them. We're to follow our Lord. And even when he was reviled, what he did not revile. Do you understand? That's our heart. That's our guide. And so in Psalm 145, when it comes to this sanctify me, I know we recognize there's this external, you know, problems that are going on in Psalm 140. Watch over me physically. But now he says, I need you to guard me spiritually. Take a look at what we begin to see here. It says in verses 1 and 2, and this is where we begin to see just David's passion. And David's passion, he says this, kind of just hear my prayer. He says, O Lord, I cry out to you, make haste to me. You understand? He's not like, okay, God, when you're ready to show up. No, he's like, this is urgent. I need you to make haste to me. Give ear to my voice when I cry out to you. Let my prayer be set before you as incense. In other words, a sweet-smelling thing to get your attention, that you're not just, not like I'm just saying words, but these are words that you are attracted to. These are words that you are just gravitating to. And that's what incense does. I don't know if you've ever been around someone where they put on the either perfume or some kind of an aftershave, and it's just enough to really catch your attention. It's not overpowering where you're like trying to breathe, but it's just enough to catch your attention, and it does. It just gravitates. And so this is what he begins to do within this passage. He makes a statement where he says this: let my prayer be set before you as incense, the lifting up of my hands as an evening sacrifice. And so we begin to see here David's passion. I need you to hear my prayer. I need you to listen to me. And so as he's doing this, as he's crying out to God, he's making this, God, you've got to listen. You got to make haste. And it's got to be something that catches your attention. Would you please, please note that I need you to hear this. And this is the passion of David's prayer. Now, there's sometimes we pray, it's what? Okay, God, well, I'm going to just pray, and if I get a response, it's okay. But David's like, I need you, Lord, to really move on this prayer. Now, notice what he does within this prayer. The first thing that he does is when he asks God to hear his prayer, he's asking God to help him, but in what? I need you to help me spiritually. The first thing he does is this: I need you to help me with self-control. Put that in your notes, verses 3-4. I need you to help me with self-control. He says this: set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips. Do not incline my heart to any evil thing, to practice wicked works with men who work iniquity. Do not let me eat of their delicacies. Do you understand? We looked at the wicked in Psalm 140, and he says what? Even though I'm around them, I don't want to practice wicked works with the men who do what? Who work iniquity. Don't let me partake of what they're partaking of. I need you that no matter what they do in their accusations, no matter what they do in their lives, set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep a watch over the door of my lips, and do not incline my heart to any evil thing. Help me love them, Lord. Help me speak words of light and salt and of your love and of your blessings. Help me do that. But I think it's so important that the first thing when David says, I'm praying so desperately, the thing that he's praying with is this: not deal with them, but in this prayer it's what? Deal with me. Please, Lord, help me with self-control. The second thing that he does is this in verses 5-7. After he says, help me with self-control, put these guards over my mouth and doors over my lips, don't incline my heart to evil, that's self-control. And then he says this: now help me to be willing to receive correction. See, sometimes like, okay, help me with self-control. The second one is tougher. Help me to be willing to receive correction. Let's take a look at verses 5-7 so you can kind of understand what happens. In other words, just protect me from my desire to sin and my desire to not want to receive correction from the sin. He says this in verse 5, let the righteous strike me and it shall be a kindness. In other words, if I'm doing wrong, then let the people who are in your spirit do what? Let them deal with me. Now he talks about striking, and you know, in other words, it's sort of like if I don't know if you've ever seen someone that panics and they're in a panic state, and sometimes you gotta, you see that movie, they smack them and all of them, they come out of it. And so what happens is it's something to kind of wake them up, but this is what he says: the righteous shall strike me, and it shall be a kindness, and let him rebuke me, and it shall be as excellent oil. Let my head not refuse it. You understand? He says, I need you, Lord, to help me to receive correction. And it's so important to he recognizes the righteous are going to say things, and it's going to wound me, it's going to hurt me, but it needs to be. It's going to be a kindness. And so when it comes to this, he says, I need him, even if it comes to a rebuke, not just an exhortation, but here he is as an actual rebuke. And within this, he says, it's going to be as excellent oil. Don't let my head refuse it running over me. Let him pour that on me so that I can do what? So that I can be willing to receive correction. Now, after he does this whole area of his attention is now on the ones who are correcting him, he then shifts now to a direction of those who need to be corrected. I want to receive correction, but what happens is this. There's others that are going to need to receive correction. He says this in the end of verse 5. He says, "For still my prayer is against the deeds of the wicked. Their judges are overthrown by the sides of the cliff, and they hear my words, for they are sweet. The bones are scattered at the mouth of the grave as when one plows and breaks up the earth." So after he talks about himself receiving correction, now he talks about those who do what? Who are not receiving correction. And for those that don't receive correction, keep in mind that what God does is this. He has a tendency of only doing what's necessary to get you to change. So if he can talk to you and say, hey, don't do this and do this instead, praise God. And you go, oh, that's right. Forgive me, Lord, for doing that. I want to do what you said. But there's others who said, no, I'm doing fine. He said, no, listen, now I got to turn up the heat. And I'll keep turning up the heat and turning up the heat and turning up the heat until you respond to what I need you to do. Why? Because God knows one thing, that you can't live and be in this intimate relationship with him if you continue in sin. And so he has to amp it up. And this is what he says. You need to amp it up to these wicked people. He says, for still my prayer is against the deeds of the wicked. Don't let them get away with it. Their judges are overthrown by the sides of the cliff. In other words, what they do is this. They don't listen to correction. If they have a judge, they throw them over the cliff. That's crazy. It's like, I don't want anyone to correct me. I'm going to throw them over a cliff. Now, what it says this, and they hear the words, they hear my words, for they are sweet. The people now, they're going to hear correction. They're going to say, yeah, they should be corrected. But these people do not want it. And so what happens is this. The bones are scattered at the mouth of the grave as when one plows and breaks up the earth. The bones that we see here, the King James, New King James says our bones. I don't think that's quite the way that it should be. It should be that their bones is the thing. The word is bones, and then it has a possessive, but it doesn't say it's mine, theirs, ours. It says bones, and that we see this. They're scattered at the mouth of the grave. So what happens is this, is that the death of the wicked is not this gentle thing. It's just like a plow comes and the dirt is just thrown over. That's the same way the bones. The bones are scattered. There is no peace in their death. And so as he talks about these wicked that need to receive correction, do what you have to do. Don't let them have peace in that, but make the correction. And so after he does this, now he makes this statement, and I think it's important to make a note as that he says this in verse 8, "But my eyes are upon you, O God the Lord." And so he comes to this, and as he begins to show me that here, where, you know, I understand their bones are going to be scattered, but what happens is this. In verses 8 through 10, he's asking God to say, help me stay in this place where I can receive power from you. Do you understand? Help me receive correction. Help me not push it away. So you know, don't let me be rebellious. Set a guard over my mouth, and I want you to, you know, just kind of help me with this area of self-control. I want you to help me to be able to receive correction. But then he does this in verses 8 through 10. If I'm in that place of self-control, and I'm in that place of receiving correction, don't let me move away from it. You understand how important that is? When you get to the point where you hear from the Lord and you're asking Him to really help you with self-control, put a guard over your mouth, put a guard over your heart, and then you're at that place where you're like, okay, if I need to be corrected, let me be open to it. Here's the problem. Usually it's for a season. And now I don't want to be corrected anymore. You've already corrected me. You're doing it again and again and again. I'm done with that correction. In verse 80 says this, but my eyes are upon you, O God the Lord. In you I take refuge. Do not leave my soul destitute. Keep me from the snares they have laid for me and from the traps of the workers of iniquity, and let the wicked fall into their own nets while I escape safely. Do you understand? I need to stay with you. Because if I don't, what happens is this. If I leave you and the protection that you offer and the provision that you offer, guess what? I'm now moving away from you and I go right into the pits, right into the area where the enemy now has control and the wicked have control. And so if I stay by you on your lap, guess what's not going to happen? I'm not going to fall into the snares that they're laying for me. If I'm there in your presence, I'm going to be protected. And so I just think it's such a powerful, powerful word where we begin to see here where God begins to just come upon them and we begin to see, yes, Lord, I know what you do. I know how you work, that you are going to do what? You're going to completely watch over everything about me. You know how to guard me. You know how to guard me physically from those attacks. You know how to guard me spiritually from those attacks. And now we begin to see that there's also this area where He says, within this, we recognize what? That He says, I need to stay in that place. I cannot move from that place. Now, once we recognize that I'm in that place, I'm staying in that place, now we move over to Psalm 142, where we move from that area where now all of a sudden it's what? It's not just that the God guards me spiritually, but God also guards me emotionally, guards me physically, spiritually, emotionally. And what happens is this, usually in my life, and I don't know if it's the same with you, but there are physical issues and I can kind of deal with them. There are spiritual issues and I can kind of deal with them. Emotional issues are tough. Emotional issues. Now, if I'm going to fight anything that's going to be the toughest, it's going to be emotions. Because my emotions do what? It drives everything. It stops my brain from thinking, stops my heart from feeling, because it's just, I have this, it's like Tinkerbell now. I got one emotion and that takes over everything and I can't break out of it. And so we begin to look at here, and I think this is where this emotional one that maybe you can recognize and maybe you can kind of see what's going on and relate to David in this way. This is where he makes a statement in Psalm 142. It says, the contemplation of David, a prayer when he was in the cave. Most scholars believe that this is where he was in the cave of Adullam, 1 Samuel 22. And if you remember, this is where David, he departs from the area of the Philistines, and now he comes over to this cave in Adullam. And this is where everyone who is in distress, everyone who is in debt, everyone who is discontented gathered. Why? Because David's a mess and he attracts people who are a mess. And I think what happens is this, is that within that place of this ultimate weakness, I want you to see what begins to happen. The first thing that David does in this psalm is he gives a protest. He gives a protest. Take a look at the first two verses. I cry out to the Lord with my voice. With my voice to the Lord, I make my supplication. I pour out my complaint before him, and I declare before him my trouble. Do you understand? Now it's not just I'm going to bring a need to the Lord, but now it's this. I'm bringing a complaint. Now it's not just I trust you. It's no. You've done something wrong. You haven't done what I've needed you to do. Your plan is not my plan, and I'm looking at my plan, and I'm thinking your plan has failed somewhere, so now I'm pouring out my complaint. You understand it's not a little complaint. He's pouring out this complaint. Do you understand how emotionally connected he is in this area of distress, this area of just what's going on? I declare before him my trouble. And I'm pouring this out to the Lord. And within this, I want you to see that this as he shelters me, what we recognize is this. He has to guard me emotionally. He has to bring me back into that place. And so David's circumstances, keep in mind, and this is what's so powerful about this psalm, that David here is under deep persecution. He's under deep distress. Now, while he's under that distress, I want to make a note here before we go through this psalm that by the time we get to the end of the psalm, his circumstances will not have changed. Note that. By the time we get to the end of the psalm, his circumstances will not have changed, but his perspective will. And this is what is so amazing about God, because we think that I only have to be happy to go before God. It's like, no, sometimes we go before the Lord and I don't know what you're doing and I don't think this is right. Something has to change here, Lord. And so he pours out his complaint before him. I'm declaring before him my trouble. And so after we see here the protest, now he declares the problem in verse 3 and 4. When my spirit was overwhelmed within me, then you knew my path. In the way which I walk, they have secretly set a snare for me. Look on my right hand and see, for there is none who acknowledges me. Refuge has failed me, and no one cares for my soul. David here is in this place, and I want you to recognize what's happening. Here's David is in the place where I am abandoned, I am alone, and I am overwhelmed. That is a hard place to be. When you are overwhelmed and there's no one to come to and talk to, there's no one to cry with and have them cry with you, there's no one to pray with and have them pray with you, do you recognize it? He says, there's no one that I can go to. There's no one that is at this thing. And so he makes a statement where he says, okay, listen, there is no one who acknowledges me. I'm in this place and I'm desperate and my refuge has failed and no one cares for my soul. Now, I do want you to note something, that there is a little bit of addendum to this. When he says no one cares for my soul, what he's meaning is this: no man cares for my soul. No person. I don't have anyone here on this side. Remember what he said at verse 3? When my spirit was overwhelmed within me, then you knew my path and the way that I walk. I know you know it. Men don't care about it, but I know one thing. I know you know it. And so even though I don't know where to turn and I don't know what to do, you do. And I don't know how to connect with you. I don't know how to go into that thing. And so now what he does is this. He moves from the area of the whole area of the problems, because I'm overwhelmed, I don't know what to do, yet I know that you do, but men are not helping me at all. And so in verses 5 and 6, he now says what? Lord, you're my portion. You are going to be my protector and my provider, and you're going to deliver me in ways that I'm not able to overcome. Take a look at what he says. In verses 5 and 6, he said, I cried to you, O Lord. I said, you are my refuge. Now remember at the end of verse 4, he says, refuge has failed me. This is the refuge of men. There's nothing on this side. But then in verse 5, I cried out to you, O Lord, and I said, you are my refuge, my portion in the land of the living. So although I have nothing, and if I lose everything, guess what? I have you. I have you. And if I have you, I have everything that I need. So often we begin to think that we need all these other things, but he says this, you are my portion in the land of the living. Attend to my cry, for I am brought very low. Deliver me from my persecutors, for they are stronger than I. So I love the heart where David says, listen, you are my portion. You are my protector. You are my provider. What I need is you. I need you to deliver me from my persecutors, because I don't have the ability. I'm so overwhelmed, Lord. And you just keep piling on and piling on and piling on. And all David does is this. In a sense, he gets very, very close to God. And as he gets close to God, guess what? The perspective of everything else changes because all he sees is God. Think about it this way. If you were, you know, just right outside the front door, all you would see is what? You'd see the door. If you back up a couple of feet, you see the dove on the wall, you know, on the outside wall, and you know, oh, this is Calvary Chapel. But you back up a block or two blocks or three blocks or four blocks, all of a sudden this church is what? You don't really see it anymore. Matter of perspective. But take a look at what he does. He says, you know what? I'm going to see you. So what he's doing is this. Either he's just running to God that all he sees is God, or he's backing up away from all these problems. No matter how big they are, it's not as big as what? God. You have to just back away. You got to change your perspective one way or another. Either run to God, put your face in his chest and just lay there like John and say, I'm going to just be here. I'm the disciple whom you love. And I'm going to just rest right here. Or I'm going to back away from the problems that the only thing I'm going to see is you and your greatness. No matter how big the mountains are that are the problems, eventually you back enough further away and all you see is what? The glory of God. I don't know if you've ever been to Colorado. Colorado's amazing. They got these huge, huge mountains. But what happens is, by the time you get to Wisconsin, you don't even see the mountains. But no matter where you are, you can always see the heavens. And I think it's so important to change your perspective, and that's what he begins to do. He says, I'm just, verse 5 and 6, I'm changing my perspective. And then in verse 7, he moves from you become the portion, you're the only thing that I'm seeking, you're the only thing that I'm desiring, to now verse 7, the praise, where he says this, bring my soul out of the prison that I may praise your name, the righteous shall surround me, for you shall deal bountifully with me. Amazing word that he begins to give us where he says, just bring my soul out of the prison, just release me from this overwhelming bondage that I am in, this emotional being place where I'm so overwhelmed and I'm so alone. He says, I need to do what? Bring me out of that prison. Bring me to you. Bring me out of that bondage and bring me to you. And he says this, bring my soul out of prison that I may praise your name. And I know what happens. When I begin to praise your name, the righteous will surround me and you're going to deal bountifully with me. I know that if I can simply change my perspective. Do you understand? Nothing in David's life changed in this psalm other than what? His perspective. He said, I just got to look to you. I don't have to look to that I'm alone here. I don't have to look to Saul still persecuting me. I don't have to look to all these things. I just have to look to you. Although all these other refuges have failed, you are the one refuge that will never fail. And so he just changes his perspective. And I love that when God shelters me, he does what? He doesn't just do that physical weakness, and he doesn't just do that emotional weakness. He does that ultimate weakness, not just the physical and spiritual, but the emotional that consumes us. This is where God becomes our shelter. Change your perspective. Just draw near to him. And lastly, in Psalm 143, we begin to see that God leads me into a place of submission. He guards me completely. Within this, I want you to see that it opens up with David in this area of penance. It says this in the first two verses. It says, hear my prayer, O Lord, give ear to my supplications. In your faithfulness, answer me. And in your righteousness, do not enter into judgment with your servant. For in your sight, no one living is righteous. So understand what's happening here in the area where David is now saying, I need you to lead me into a place of submission to you. The reason he does this is recognizing, God, the first thing I'm going to recognize is this. I'm in a place of error. You've got to change that. So he says, hear my prayer, give ear to my supplications, in your faithfulness answer me, and in your righteousness do not enter into judgment with your servant. Why? Because in your sight, no one living is righteous. I can't come to you on my merit. I can't come to you on the fact that I'm such a good person. I have to come to you, what? As a broken individual. I'm coming to you as a child that is in need of their comfort. And so as he does this, we see here his penance. I know that I'm not coming to you because I'm good. I'm coming to you in need of mercy. I'm coming to you in need of grace. I'm coming to you and I need you to give ear to my supplications and I still need you to be faithful, even though what? Even though I'm not. Do you understand? He's looking for the God of mercy. And as he does so, now we see here that in verses 3 and 4, he begins to talk about what? The persecution. And so as he talks about, I'm not good, but keep in mind that here he talks about the others as well. He says in verse 3 through 4, he says, for the enemy has persecuted my soul. He has crushed my life to the ground. He has made me to dwell in darkness. Let those who have long been like those who have long been dead. Therefore, my spirit is overwhelmed within me. My heart within me is distressed. Do you understand? He's talking to God. He says, I need you to bring me to a place of submission. Now, what happens is this. I know that I'm not right, but I also know that these people aren't right. But what I'm going to do is this. I'm going to come into this area now where I'm going to be looking to remember who you are and what you've done. So David here is going to move from this area of the persecution to all these people who do what? He says, therefore, my spirit is overwhelmed. My heart is distressed. In verses 5 and 6, he looks now to the past. He remembers God. And this is so important that when we are in that place of being overwhelmed, take a moment and go back to what? God's past faithfulness. Has he ever not been faithful? I mean, there's times when you're going through it, you wonder, but never when he's done the work. It's always, of course you are faithful. So he does this. I remember the days of old. I meditate on all your works. I muse on the works of your hands. I spread out my hands to you. My soul longs for you like a thirsty land. He says this, I know who you are. I know what you've done. And so as he comes into this place of recognizing submission, he does first off, he says, I know that I'm not all that good. But I know this, I know that you have been faithful. I'm asking you to be faithful. I'm asking you to watch over me. I'm asking you to not judge me. But I'm asking for your grace and your mercy. And I know that I can get it because you've always given me your grace and your mercy. And now he does this. In verses 7 through 12, you begin to see David's plea. And this plea is huge. This plea is huge in this area. I want you to recognize that what he does in this plea. In verse 7, he says this, answer me speedily. This is his plea. He's crying out to God. My spirit fails. I'm coming to an end of me. Do not hide your face from me, lest I be like those who go down to the pit. If you don't reveal yourself, I'm dying here, Lord. That's all he's saying. But then notice what he does in verse 8. And this is amazing because you have these five things, the number of grace that he's asking God to do. The first thing in verse 8 is this, cause me to hear. I want to hear you, Lord. But notice what he does. I want to hear your loving kindness in the morning. I'm going to be eager to just get up and to seek you. And I want to hear of your loving kindness. For in you, I do trust. I want to hear from you. And I trust in you. I know that what you speak is what I need to hear. And then he says this, after he says, cause me to hear in verse 8, the second part of verse 8 is this, and cause me to know. Do you know what he said? Cause me to hear and then to receive it and cause me to know. Cause me to hear of your loving kindness. Cause me to know the ways in which I should walk, for I lift up my soul to you. Cause me to hear. Cause me to know. And then he says this, deliver me. I need to hear from you. I need to know this. And then I need to know what? Where you're going to take me. Where that deliverance is going to be. Deliver me, O Lord, from my enemies. In you I take shelter. Then after he says, cause me to hear. Cause me to know. Deliver me. He then does this in verse 10. Teach me. Teach me to do your will. Do you understand? Cause me to hear, cause me to know, deliver me. And even though I've heard and now I know, guess what? I need to learn more. Do you understand? It's not like, oh, I've got enough data now, Lord. You can stop. No, 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 no. We're never done. And then so he says, now teach me to do your will. For you are my God. Your spirit is good. And after he says, cause me to hear, cause me to know, deliver me, teach me. Then he says this at the end of verse 10, lead me in the land of uprightness. Such a powerful thing that he begins to talk about, cause me to hear, cause me to know, you know, and he says, teach me to do your will, lead me in the land. And then lastly, verse 11, revive me, O Lord, for your name's sake. The beautiful thing about just awaken me, quicken me, bring me back to life for your name's sake, for your righteousness' sake. Bring my soul out of trouble in the mercy, in your mercy, cut off my enemies and destroy all those who afflict my soul, for I am your servant. The beautiful thing about David just in these prayers is he's so open, he's so honest, he's so raw in what he does. And so he talks about, yeah, God, I know what it is. I need you to search me. I need you to go ahead and be the one to safeguard me. I need you to be the one to sanctify me. I need you to be the one to shelter me. And lastly, I need you to be the one to bring me into a place of submission. And that's only going to come when what? When I recognize you got to cause me to hear. And that's submission. You got to cause me to know. You got to cause me to do. You got to lead me in the land. You got to revive me. This has to be you. That brings me into a place of what? I'm dependent upon you. It's in that place of submission. So I just love the fact that within seeing everything that God does is he searches me and he safeguards me and sanctifies me and shelters me. He comes to that place of what? I've got to come into a place of submission. I know that you guard me. And ultimately we see what? Well, when he comes in this place of leading, he guards me completely. So first he knows what to guard me from. And then he guards me to this area physically. He guards me spiritually. He guards me emotionally. And then he guards me completely. So it's just a beautiful thing that he begins to do. Now, as we come next week, as we look at the next Psalms, Psalm 144, now he's going to guide him. Guide me physically. Psalm 145, guide me emotionally. Psalm 146, guide me spiritually. Psalm 147, guide me completely. So this is the guarding Psalms. The next is the guiding Psalms. So that's what you have to look forward to. So your homework for this next week is Psalm 144 through 147. Then we'll jump in it. And then the next week we'll finish up the book of Psalms. And then we'll go into Kings. So that's where we're going to start looking at some of the history. We've covered 1 and 2 Samuel, and I was going to go into Proverbs and just God begin to just say, nope, not yet, not yet, not yet. So we'll hit Proverbs, but we're going to do Kings first. So we'll go through 1 Kings, 2 Kings, and so that's what we're going to be looking at. That'll be at least 2 weeks from now. But so you can start reading in them if you want, let's get through this part here first. And so, Lord, we are so grateful for who you are, so grateful for your word, so grateful for your heart, all that you do for us, all that you lead us in. And we're asking, Lord, that in your spirit and your grace that you would continue to watch over us, that you would guard us as we look next week, that you will guide us, that we can put ourselves in your hands and know that we're protected, that you can lead us where you need to lead us, and we know that it's going to be in the way that's right. So, Father, teach us these truths, knit our hearts to you in these ways. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.